I'd like to do in my remarks is to really connect some of the issues from the morning and the afternoon and talk about some of the reasons that I think they are connected, that one of the main reasons I was concerned about vertical manipulation and sort of vertical integration is that, in fact, that is a nascent competition issue for certain types of platforms. Another theme that I want to continue from the morning is that in order to understand what the role of regulation should be and to understand the welfare consequences of behavior, it's important to first understand the strategies of the firms, because firms are most likely to do something that's a bit of an antitrust risk as well as potentially harmful for consumer welfare if they're facing certain kinds of threats. And so understanding what firms would view as really existential threats is sort of a critical input to knowing where we should be concerned, or at least to understand what's going on. So I want to start out just by thinking about how I would talk about this to my business school classes, because that's really, I think, where you start thinking about business strategy and business incentives. And so when I teach about platforms to my business school classes, I start by posing some questions they want to think about. Are these platforms going to tend towards monopoly? When would you see competition? When are they going to be profitable? And what I'll really want to focus on today is it possible for a new startup or a new company to enter and succeed against established incumbents? And if so, how would you do that? And if you understand how you would do that, of course, that also flips back to if you were the incumbent. Of course, I always, as the economist, like to take the side of the entrant when teaching my classes. But of course, the flip side of the advice for what the entrant should do is what the incumbent should block. And understanding those strategies can help guide policy. So, you know, we talk a lot about basic platform economics, and the key point there, of course, is the chicken and egg problem. If an entrant's going to come in and get started, they need to solve that: more buyers, more sellers, more sellers, more buyers, and also the broader types of economies of scale that are incredibly important in tech companies. And it's not just, you know, having more data, which is important, but one thing I really like to focus on is learning by doing. The fact that if you're one of the benefits of being an incumbent is that you have lots of users, you can experiment and learn on the users what works and use the data, but not just have historical data of any type, but historical experiments that have allowed you to understand how to make your product better. When I think about, I ask questions about market structure and profitability, how do you get started? How do you scale and grow? And of course, for startups, a lot of times they're actually using platforms initially to get started. So startups that I work with are advertising on Google to acquire their customers initially. And they also have questions about how do you grow from there? Do you expand horizontally, or do you go into different verticals? So to start with, I want to pick an example, and actually Amy Ray also used this example earlier today, but it's one that I think is useful to go back to from before, you know, the modern tech era, although this was also in a way a tech case. And this is the case of American Airlines and Sabre, and here's a newspaper article from 1982, and it's talking about a Justice Department investigation to see if computerized scheduling and reservation services might have been manipulated to give an advantage to American. Here's some quotes in that same article from the American CEO. He starts out by saying, well, the best guarantee that the Sabre system doesn't advantage American Airlines is that we have to sell them to travel agents. So travel agents buy them. That disciplines us to be fair. But then he goes on immediately to say, well, we're mostly fair, but actually we advantage American Airlines. So the fact that travel agents choose systems put some discipline on the system, but not enough to keep them from advantaging American. And, you know, then a final point that he makes is, well, we invested in the Sabre system, we built it, so therefore, you know, we should be allowed to use it to advantage our own airline. And of course, anybody who's been following, say, the Google antitrust case will recognize all of these as the same arguments that Google used to talk about their vertical manipulation. So when we think about this case as an economist, in some ways I think this case feels a little easier because we feel like we have like an allergic reaction to somebody not showing customers prices. Like that feels immediate and harmful, and we can immediately map that into the impact on prices. But in fact, you know, when I think about this case, really the thing that bothers me more about it is the fact that it made it hard for low-cost carriers to come in. So if you know more about the history of this, I won't go into all the details today, but not only did this manipulation soften price competition and mislead consumers, but it also, led to the exit of low-cost airlines because those low-cost airlines weren't able to compete on price and get the traffic away from American. And, of course, we know that a low-cost airline can enter in some routes, gain scale, and then grow into a larger competitor. And so that the using your platform to keep someone from getting a toehold and eventually reducing competition is really what concerns me. So if I put that in context, of course, as we talked about this morning, there are lots of things platforms do and in the vertical space that are actually good for consumers and in the interest of consumers. So, you know, Walmart ensures suppliers are competitive. Airbnb makes sure that hosts that respond quickly and provide high quality are ranked more highly. Even search engines demote irrelevant ads and don't show them. All of these are things that maybe the advertisers or the suppliers don't like, but are to the benefit of consumers. And so those are types of vertical behavior that I might not worry as much about. So the kinds of things that I'm going to be more concerned about are things that might be really threats to a dominant platform. And so when I started thinking about this, one question I started looking at more than 10 years ago was, you know, how could a search engine compete, a general horizontal search engine compete? And so one way that a smaller search engine can compete is to get really good in a narrow category. And, of course, the chicken and egg problem of a platform, more users, more advertisers, more users, can actually be solved within a vertical. And so one way you can compete is to get really good at something. So I was advising Microsoft. They went out and found the very best travel search provider, ITA, at the time, integrated that into the back end of Bing and had better travel services than Google did, which then was allowing them to steal share away from Google in the travel vertical. And the hope was that, from Microsoft's perspective, that would then allow them to grow and get the consumers to do adjacent verticals. Now, what happened was Google bought the ITA travel search engine, which ended the Bing relationship and flipped it to where Google was better in travel than Bing was. And so this is interesting because, you know, first of all, the travel search itself, it could have spawned into something completely distinct and not integrated with either platform. But it also was something that helped a very small, Bing was around 7 or 8% market share at the time, it wasn't called Bing, it could have helped it grow into a larger general competitor. And broadly, if you were going to compete with Amazon or compete with Google or compete with eBay in what they do, you know, it would be silly to come in and try to think that you could be better at everything all at once. Instead, generally, you might start in a vertical. And so they recognize those threats and try to make sure that in a vertical, nobody gets too big or too strong. Another way that this can play out, which is very related, is that a company like, say, Amazon can start out. They're not actually in search at all. They're not in general search. They're just doing shopping. But over time, they acquire more users, and then they enter as an ad platform, which then is more of a competitive threat to Google. So we have to worry about these vertical things because that actually is the entry path. It's really the main viable entry path to compete with a big platform that has more buyers and more sellers. We have to watch for those the verticals because they are nascent competitors. Now, one challenge in making these kinds of antitrust arguments, the Sabre case, in some sense, would be an easier one to make as an economic expert. You could come in and you could show that consumers were getting different prices and the harm would be like very immediate and apparent. And I think one of the challenges in the policy arena is that, you know, the harm from the vertical manipulation, how am I going to show that if you hadn't put this shopping comparison engine out of business, they might have grown into the next Amazon in, say, Europe, and then from there they might have grown into a competitive ad platform You know, maybe that would have happened, and now we see that it did happen. When we were talking about it, we didn't know whether Amazon would be successful in advertising, and we still don't know how big it will be. And so as an economic expert, to talk about these longer-run impacts, I think, is really challenging, even though that's the welfare effects from that are just so much larger than the short-term effects. Another way that you can enter is to find to get a lot of traffic from intermediaries. And so, again, in search, that was another way that we wanted to get from an unprofitable and never possibly profitable at 7% market share to something bigger. So you look out and you say, who else has a lot of consumers? And maybe I could get those consumers as a block to switch platforms. And, of course, in turn, that's a threat to the incumbent platform. So just as an example, if Google had not had its own operating system in mobile and hadn't made a deal with the iPhone, we might have seen very different dynamics in the search business. So say the mobile phones, a mobile operating system, if it makes a search engine a default, can swing very big chunks of traffic all at the same time. And so that means two things. First of all, that intermediary that can shift a whole bunch of consumers in a block, risk one is they might shift those to a competitor. And risk two is they're just going to extract all the surplus. So Google has to pay billions of dollars a year to Apple in order to make sure that Google is the search default. And this also can happen with browsers. A very popular browser can put up to auction what's the default search engine and extract a lot of the surplus and so on. And so once we understand that the big risk to the firms is any other intermediary who could shift big blocks of, take their partners with them to another platform, we can think about the incentives that the platform has to make that not happen. And there's lots of examples of these different, we call them referring services. They may not be able to exactly bring their customers with them, but they can shift customers from one platform to the other, and they typically have a lot of power and are also potentially very ripe for vertical integration that may or may not be beneficial. Another big theme that's important is that when we think about all the things that a company can do to try to in the face of a potential threat, what we would like a company to do when they're faced with a threat from a new entrant is to make a better service, or and if it's a vertical competitor, they might say, if I'm worried that shopping is going to be really big, I'm going to make my own shopping and it's going to be really awesome. And if I don't manipulate, everybody's going to use my awesome shopping service. That's one welfare-enhancing thing you might do. Another welfare-enhancing thing you might do is just make your search engine or your platform even better so that even if that shopping engine gets big, people still want to use your main central platform. But there's also things that you might do that are welfare-harming, like make or buy an adequate vertical service and then promote it and advantage it to take away customers from the competing vertical service. Make sure that you own that thing so that if you've now squashed the nascent threat of a shopping entrant getting big and actually ultimately turning into a horizontal competitor. And I think these types of things are particularly harmful if they're innovative services, scale-driven services, or services with network effects. So, things like ad-driven news media or review websites, these are all examples of things that can be really harmed and therefore never get the chance to grow into something that might become a more horizontal competitor. Now, this type of thing also happens in other types of contexts as well. So we haven't talked a lot about ad tech today, and it's actually kind of hard to talk about because there's so much jargon and it's really complicated. But just as an example, we can think about what's a way that someone might enter and compete in ad exchanges. Well, if you have two advertising exchanges where publishers and advertisers buy and sell ads, a smaller ad exchange might hope that they can get advertisers and publishers to multi-home, and that might give them a chance to grow into a larger ad exchange and a more effective competitor. And when you think from the publisher side of this market, it's actually, in principle, pretty tough competition because the ad exchanges are giving the publishers money. So that's perfect substitutes. It's just, which ad exchange is going to give me more money? And so if there's two equally sized ad exchanges, all the revenue should go to the publishers because, one exchange says, I'll give you, this many cents per impression, and then the other publisher says, I'll give you a little bit more, and they would cut out their take rate and have to give all the surplus to the publishers, or else the publishers would just go to the other ad exchange. So it's really scary if you're a big ad exchange to worry about a smaller ad exchange growing, because if they if they're equally sized, this is kind of a zero profit business, basically. You have to give all the revenue to the publishers. Is that my time? Yep. So let me finish my thought here. So in order to prevent that type of growth, that you can use something like a tool, a software tool that helps people compare across ad exchanges, and if it's vertically integrated, those tools can actually advantage one ad exchange over the other. And so in particular, this particular practice was ended in 2017, the software would basically collect the bids from all the other ad exchanges and then give Google a chance to come in at the end and outbid the others just by a penny and get the traffic, which prevented the smaller nascent competitor from growing. So the big theme is that in these types of markets, we have to look at what are the tactics that are used to try to keep the nascent competitors from growing, and be very very cautious about all the different things that you can do. So I'm out of time, but I just will highlight the ways that you compete with different services really are different from business to business, and the way that a nascent competitor would compete against a social network may be different than how it competes in a search engine or an operating system or e-commerce. And so for each of these industries, you need to first think about the business strategy of how a nascent competitor comes in, and then look for exclusionary conduct or other types of squashing or integrations or acquisitions that stop the particularly threatening path. Thank you.